Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I forgot how loud that was. I said, I warned everyone. I was like, it's loud. And then it still almost deafened me. And I took my AirPods out.
But I missed it so much.
We were like, should we play that again? Because it was kind of a joke. But yeah, let's go ahead and do it. Anyway, everyone, welcome back to Explain It To Me, the show where we have Ashton explain other fandoms to us that aren't Star Wars. And literally the reason I wanted to do this show is for Rings of Power. And So we're finally doing it. The first two episodes premiered while we were all three at Dragon Con, and then Ashton and I got con crud from Dragon Con, so we were sick for episode three. Then Molly and I had to go to Hollywood for the Andor premiere. Then
I can't believe you would go to Hollywood when there's Lord of the Rings to talk about.
Then there was something else, and then episode five, we were all three of us at a bachelor party, but we're finally... Mm-hmm. We're finally able to get our schedules aligned so we can talk about the Rings of Power. We've all been keeping up with it week to week, just haven't had time to actually talk about it. But thanks everyone.
Sounds
for
like
your
a
patience.
Lot of excuses. I don't know.
It is a lot of excuses. But Matt McDonald, thank you for a super chat and for expressing your excitement at our return. I have a lot of questions over the past five weeks. But since we haven't had a chance to do this yet, I know what Molly's opinion of the show is. Ashton, how have you been feeling about it as a uber Tolkien fan?
I've been enjoying it a lot. I think that it's exciting to see the Lord of the Rings like property actually start to get some new material. You know, because you see things like Star Wars and Marvel and all these things that are constantly evolving. And as like a big fan of Lord of the Rings, like it's been kind of the same stuff for a while. Like even when we've gotten new books, it's been basically like just a little bit of an expansion on stories that we've already heard. A lot of the stuff that's in this show is actually new. And I mean, some of it they're adapting because it isn't an adaptation to the TV medium. But, you know, I think that all the changes that they've made have been for the better as far as storytelling within the framework that they have for TV. So I've been enjoying it quite a lot. Yeah.
I think before it even started. Oh, go ahead, Molly.
Well, I was just going to ask, does Lord of the Rings have like a Legends series of books to it? Kind of like how Star Wars has books that are like not really related to the canon. Does Lord of the Rings have that too?
Not exactly. So the equivalent of that for Lord of the Rings would be mainly the Silmarillion, which is basically like the first thing Tolkien worked on with Lord of the Rings and the last thing that he worked on. Like it's kind of a almost textbook format history of Middle Earth and Arda. And that kind of is basically that. There's some other books that have like, you know, other stories that are put together from Tolkien's notes. Some of them are contradictory to what he ended up settling on for the Silmarillion. So generally like canon is what's in the Silmarillion because that was like the last thing he worked on. So as far as where he settled on certain ideas, it's what's in Silmarillion.
Gotcha.
It still matches kind of the Star Wars thing of it's all mythology though. So, and even he, I remember between Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, he changed how Bilbo got the ring and he changed Riddles in the Dark. And then kind of like we've been talking about Andor and Fest and how they changed canon, but alluded to it and pointed it out. Like, didn't he in the intro to Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, when he changed that, he was like, so the first version is what Bilbo told Gandalf. like the lie that he said, and the new version is what actually happened.
And also, like, as far as The Hobbit goes, that's all basically the book that Bilbo wrote, you know. Mm-hmm. So even within the, you know, the actual canon, while it is canon, there is a certain amount of, is there unreliable narrator? Maybe. Like, it's all the stuff that Bilbo decided to write down, you know, mm-hmm. and how he decided to write it.
Mm-hmm. Is that true of Lord of the Rings as well?
With Frodo? I don't think so. With Lord of the Rings, I think it's supposed to actually be just a telling of what actually happened. Although, you know, like, Frodo is, like, writing the rest of the story, and then Sam writing the very end of it. So it is sort of within the format of maybe it's actually the you know, writings of the actual characters. But, like, I don't know. There's some stuff that I don't think was actually that. And so Lord of the Rings is kind of different.
Mm-hmm. And most of this show is coming from the appendices of Lord of the Rings?
A lot of it is. It's also coming from Silmarillion. You know,
well, like, kind of, because that's legally they don't have that, but...
Well, I think that they have rights over the stuff that's the Second Age in the Silmarillion, but I'm not 100% sure. I haven't really looked into that sort of thing.
It's all...
Yeah, they have, like, rights to some stuff and not other stuff, so they're kind of having to weave in and out of what they...
Yeah, there's... There's a lot of stuff that they just kind of allude to because they can't say it outright, you know? Like, for whatever reason, they can get away with just, like, depicting things and being like, wonder what those trees are about, you know? Like, and just not actually talking about it.
And I think Alden? I was about to say, I think it was Alden that mentioned on Casterly Talk that, like, they can say Morgoth, but they can't say Melkor and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Who knows? I mean, I haven't really, like, dug into what exactly they bought the rights to, just because I didn't want to get inadvertently spoiled on anything. But it is kind of interesting to see how they kind of, like, navigate the legal hurdles. Mm-hmm.
And I was going to talk about, because you mentioned it, the fact that they had to adapt this to be an on-screen version of events, and they're compressing, like, thousands of years into 40 episodes, right? And they've really compressed the timeline.
Well, because they explained it as, like, you know, if they didn't change the timeline a little bit, and a little bit, I guess it's kind of a big bit, but, you know, if they didn't change it at all, then what we would end up seeing is, like, we would have characters like Galadriel and Elrond and Gil-galad that are throughout the series, but basically all of the human characters would be constantly getting aged out of the story. And getting replaced with new, you know, new actors playing new roles. And it would be very hard as an audience to actually, like, get to know those characters, because mm-hmm. they, you know, unless they just expanded it to, like, 20 seasons or something ridiculous, we wouldn't have enough time with each of those characters to get to know them.
And, like, knowing a little bit about what happens to Tarmiriel and Alpharazon and all the Numenor stuff, it's like, yeah, you'd only have a couple episodes to get to know them. It's like, oh, and they're gone. It's like, it'll feel a lot better to build up that storyline.
Their names, the just like whatever two names you just said, they sound like drug names to me.
Farazan.
Yeah.
Ask your primary care provider about Farazan is right for you.
Side effects include betrayal.
Well, I did want to bring this up, not just because we love Alden, but Arendir is for sure, like, one of my favorite characters in this show so far.
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, this has been a perfect example of how to correctly add new characters into an existing legendarium. Like, I'm not going to get into it now, but, like, The Hobbit kind of had a problem with that, where a lot of the new characters that they added felt like it was just to pad the time of the of the series into a full three movies, which was kind of unnecessary.
Find me one person that likes Alfred, and I'll show you a liar.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, I don't want to be too negative about those movies, but, like, I feel like they kind of are an example of it going kind of wrong, but this one's been great. Like, all the new characters that they've added have been amazing.
Mm-hmm. And they need to add someone that you don't know what's going to happen to him, because this is the whole latest episode was very tense.
Yeah.
With Arendir, Bronwyn, Adar, Theo, all of those characters, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen to them. And I thought that they might kill all of them at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's really cool just to see what they're doing with, like, what was Mordor like before everything got like destroyed, basically, for all mm-hmm. intents and purposes. You know, like there were people living there. Like what was it like there? And I think they've done a great job of showing that. And it's actually something that the Shadows of Mordor games actually kind of like explore a little bit, is like, what's the part of Mordor that's not volcanic wasteland, you know? And it kind of like does hint at the idea that before like, you know, Aradruin exploded, they had kind of a normal place, then people lived there. And, you know, I don't know. It's fun to see that, because that's not really talked about in the books much at all. So,
well, since you brought, I was going to bring up the Shadow Games a little bit. We're talking about changes and adaptations and stuff. Has there been anything, as a mega fan, that's like rankled you along the lines of sexy Shelob?
Okay, so I hate that, which we've talked about before. You know, as far as things that have rankled me, not really. I haven't really gotten upset about any of the changes in the show. I've been constantly, it's actually been kind of fun as somebody who has, like, you know, understands the story from the books, trying to figure out, like, okay, so are they not going to include this thing? Are they going to work that in at some point? How is this going to line up? And trying to, like, figure out what they're going to do ahead of time is actually kind of fun. So I'm kind of glad that they didn't just do a direct adaptation for that reason. Plus, I think that they're absolutely right about it being very, very difficult to tell that story with the human characters constantly getting changed out.
I guess, Molly, you brought up the idea of Tolkien legends or something. It's like, I guess the shows are kind of that, or the, not just the adaptations, the films and the, especially the TV series, which is more of a changing things around, but still sticking to the spirit of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a Tolkien legend situation.
Yeah, sort of. And I mean, I guess the video games would be like, just, you know, super out there, not canon, but, you know, like Force Unleashed version of, you know,
Lord yeah, yeah. What's been your favorite storyline that they've been telling so far?
I mean, the last episode was probably my favorite episode, and like we were saying before we actually went online, ironically, my favorite storyline has been the storyline with Elrond and Durin. But they weren't even in this episode, but it's my favorite episode so far. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what they've been doing in the next episodes.
I've felt the same way, really. The Southland stuff hasn't, even though I've enjoyed Arendir quite a bit and I've been intrigued, I haven't loved all the Southland stuff. I think the Harfoots are what I get most excited to see every time, with the Stranger and all that.
Yeah.
But agreed, none of that was in this episode. And it was the episode that really made me go like, okay, I'm into this series now. It really solidified my enjoyment, and I want to know what's going to happen next. Molly, what's been your favorite storyline?
I would say the Harfoots stuff too, because like Nori is just a delightful tiny gift to all of us. Like, I love her so much, and I love her relationship with the Stranger. And I was just thinking, because we just watched Hocus Pocus 1 and 2, it reminds me of the relationship between Danny and Billy. Like, just like a very childlike kind of relationship between the two of them. So I don't know. It's a nice change of pace for the other stuff in the show that's like really serious, and Galadriel, like all the elves basically are like really serious all the time, except Elrond has like a little bit of humor. But
well, he's only half elf, so you know,
there you go.
He's got to joke around some of the time.
But yeah, the Harfoots are adorable, and I just really want to know more about Meteor Man.
I think the Shire stuff in both the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies, every time they're in the Shire, I love it to death. So the first introduction for the Harfoots, where they were all camouflaged and then like threw all the leaf blankets off and set up their little houses, I was like, this is awesome. I really loved all that. But yeah, also they have darkness to them, and that they're like migrating, and they're like, cut their wheels off, leave them behind. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, and it's kind of cool. I found that moment really neat, because like the very beginning of Fellowship of the Ring, and concerning hobbits, where Tolkien starts talking about hobbits. The thing that he says that has always been a quality that they have is the ability to just like disappear and pass without trace around the big folk, and them just kind of like never notice them. And we kind of get to see like proto hobbits doing exactly that, you know, which is just was cool. There are a lot of little like fun nods to things from the books constantly in this show.
If you have you read or watched it with the X-ray thing on?
No.
If you pull up your phone, if you're casting it, or if you watch it online with the X-ray Amazon stuff, it will pull up passages of the book and the appendices, and it'll be like, this is where we got that from. Oh, it's really cool. Interesting.
I'll have to check that out.
Since you mentioned Durin being one of your favorite storylines, did you think the table story was true? Or like, I called bullshit on it right away. I was like, I don't think that's real. And then seeing him laugh about it, I was like, yeah.
I actually didn't think that immediately that he was lying. I was surprised by that. I thought that was pretty funny. I mean, I was like, it's kind of weird that there's like this just like stone is so special to the dwarf. Like, it's not like a ore or anything like that, but I guess it makes sense. It's some kind of special stone. And then when they explained what he was doing, I was like, oh, that's hilarious. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So something that I was told by Rachel Cushing when I did Casterly Talk with Alden Diaz and Ken Knapsack, she mentioned the Mithril origin story. So is that that's all brand new? The whole
that's
like,
new.
There's a tree and a Balrog and an elf, lightning.
Yeah, that's all new. In the books, there's it seems to be that Mithril is only really found around Khazad Dûm, but it might also be in Numenor and some other places, because it's like they have stuff made of Mithril occasionally, and it's not clear where it came from. So, you know, it's not really stated for sure what Mithril is or where it comes from. It's just that, you know, the dwarves found it around Khazad Dûm at the very least, and it's very special as far as materials go.
Interesting. So I guess they're basically setting up that the Light of the Silmarils is kind of within Mithril. So if they can, I have a lot of questions about elves and them fading away, what sustains them, so that they're like going to build a Mithril lighthouse or something that can help.
I don't know exactly what their plan is at this particular point, as far as how exactly they're going to distribute Mithril power to all of the elves. But what they seem to be alluding to is the fact that in Middle Earth or Arda, all the elves that actually like went to the Undying Lands and saw the two trees from the prologue before they were destroyed by Morgoth, they're like more in tune with their spiritual self and just more powerful than other elves and men. You know, like they're just extremely powerful and spiritually strong, and so I think what they're alluding to is the fact that now that the trees are gone and that power is no longer just circulating through the world, that like spiritual energy is like waning within the elves. I think that Gil-galad might be kind of like making some assumptions about it actually killing them, because like there's elves that never went and saw the trees and they're still elves, you know, like they're not just dead. So I don't know. I'm interested to see. I mean, it could also just be another like adaptation. They're just kind of changing something about the way that the world works. And that's fine. You know, it's part of the story.
I like the idea of Celebrimbor just being a little too dramatic about the story.
Yeah.
And then he's like, we're all going to die if we don't get this stuff.
Yeah.
And Elrond is like, okay, man.
I like that.
I mean, it could be like, you know, Gil-galad and Celebrimbor continuing to manipulate Elrond and getting him to think that it's more serious than it is, so that he can talk Durin into letting them use Mithril.
I think I interpreted it as him saying, we are going to fade away. We will eventually have to go home. And even if it's like in 1,000, 2,000 years, it's like, I guess to an elf, it's not that long the way that they set up, you know. I haven't seen Durin in 20 years. And Durin's like, where the hell have you been? To an elf, they're like, oh my God, we only have a few thousand years before we all fade away. We got to fix this. I guess that's how I interpreted it. But yeah, he's also being very serious about the whole thing. In the first episode, they send try to send Galadriel back to Valinor. How and when and why do elves decide to go back? Can they do that whenever they want, or do they need Gil-galad's permission, or what's the deal with going back to the Undying Lands?
So, okay, that is a complicated question depending on when and who you're talking about. So the Noldor, including and Galadriel, when they went to Middle-earth in the first place from the Undying Lands, they actually, their party, not Galadriel's part of the group, but some of them killed other elves in order to get boats to sail to Middle-earth. And then they took them north and sailed them to Middle-earth. And then before they did that, Manwë, who's one of the Valar, who's like the Valar of fate, he's kind of like the fates from, you know, Greek mythology, that sort of thing. He kind of sees the future, but it never really talks directly. He kind of stated that the Noldor were cursed and that they weren't allowed back into the Undying Lands because they had done great evil. So they continue with their oath because they swore to get the Silmarils back, and they go to Middle Earth. And then at this point, they're not able to go back to the Undying Lands because they're barred from going, just like humans are supposed to be. After Arendil goes and gets the Valar and gets them to help defeat Morgoth at the end of the First Age, they lift the Doom of Mandos, and the elves are then allowed to go back to the Undying Lands. But a lot of them still choose not to because they're still... some of them go to Middle-earth, Galadriel included, because they were able to kind of make something more of their lives and do like great deeds and be heroes rather than just being an elf in the Undying Lands doing elf things, you know? And so Galadriel's story in the books is very interesting because she goes to Middle-earth with this ambition to become like a hero or a leader. And then eventually she has the chance to take the ring from Frodo, and she passes it up. And so her wisdom wins out over her ambition. And that's like the big climax of her story. And that's why she says in the movie and everything that she's passed the test. She'll remain Galadriel and go into the West. And so like her wisdom wins out over her ambition.
Could she not go West until that moment?
Well, she couldn't until the end of the First Age. So, I mean, at this point she could, but she wouldn't because of her ambition. And in the story that they're telling in the show, she has this sort of vengeance that is driving her. She's trying to fulfill her brother's oath to destroy Sauron.
Which this episode did so much to build up that moment in Lord of the Rings. Like, now I kind of get it more that if she were to take the ring, it's like, yeah, that would be awful. I loved the conversation between her and Adar.
It's crazy that's like the peak of her storyline, because like thinking about that part in the movies, it's just like, oh yeah, she just said no and it was all good, and then now I guess she's ready to retire. I don't know.
Yeah, it means a lot more if you know what's going on in the books, because it's like centuries, thousands of years in the making of her, you know, going to Middle Earth, becoming the leader of Lothlorien, which isn't a thing right away, as you're seeing in this as of the Second Age. It's not, you know, happened yet. And it's a very long story that culminates in her being offered the chance to become essentially the ruler of Middle Earth entirely, probably, and her passing it up because it's not right, you know?
Yeah. This makes sense that it was kind of a test for herself to, and then she wants to prove that she's worthy of actually going to Valinor.
Yeah.
I'll pop up to Thomas. Thank you, Thomas, for the super chat. Really enjoying the musical themes. Your thoughts?
I've been thinking the music is excellent. Especially the there's actually one musical theme that plays that every time I hear it, I think it's the beginning of the Reigns of Castamere, because it has first two
and it plays. I've noticed the same thing.
But overall, I've been really liking it. I especially like the theme. I don't know if this is what they were going for, but the theme with the like sand moving around, what it makes me think of is when you have like sound waves hitting a sheet with something like sand on it, and it makes me think of the creation myth from the Silmarillion, where the Ainur are all singing their song, and then Melkor sings his discordant tone, and that's like the part with the dark sand that's like winding its way through the sand.
Oh, cool.
But it's still actually making the shapes that are intended, and it's, I don't know, that's what I think of whenever I see that theme.
That's neat. That's that the one. Up. That's the part of the Silmarillion I know best. I've read it like 5 times. That's a really cool thought. But yeah, I think Howard Shore did the main theme. Bear McCreary is doing everything else. I haven't just taken the time to listen to it on its own much.
I haven't either.
Just because of time.
I mean, I love the music. I couldn't tell you exactly. Like, I don't think I could pinpoint what theme is what at this point. But I need to just go back through and listen to some of it. But it does sound very Lord of the Rings. Like, it sounds right for what this is.
Yeah,
I know the main theme well.
Well, they're doing the same thing that they did in the Lord of the Rings movies, where they're like sort of telling the story with the music at the same time as you're watching it, you know, because they have themes for all of these characters and places, and they're letting those kind of like weave in and out of each other to sort of accompany the story, which is just really fun, instead of it just being something that is in the background for your ears to not, you know, be bored.
This is interesting. The theme of Numenor is played by instruments that are never heard in Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit movies.
I never noticed that, but that is cool. I like that.
Like, yeah, like the instruments were lost.
Yeah.
Like the Numenorians were.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah. I remember really liking Khazad Dûm's music. I always just like the dwarf music. Mm-hmm. And Numenor's theme is good. But I need to just sit and listen to all of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
And our good friend Sean Sully, thank you, Sean, suggests the Mithril story could all be false and the whole thing is a mislead to get Celebrimbor to build a tower, possibly by some Dark Lord, which does lead me to, I mean, this is kind of a question that I was going to say for later, but why not now? Do you think we've seen Sauron yet? Or do you think they're going to save him for later? Basically, I think I'm going to ask like Jeff Goldblum would in Jurassic Park. Do you think we're actually going to see some Rings of Power in this series called The Rings of Power?
So I was actually going to say the same thing as Jesse. Poppy is definitely Sauron.
Oh, no.
But no, I don't think so. I think that the Stranger might be Sauron. Possibly. Mostly because I'm struggling to think of who else it could be, unless they're really changing things and making it one of the wizards. But that would be like actually a pretty big change. So unless that's the case, the only other person I can really think of that it could be is Sauron.
Just like he's his own thing and we haven't met him yet.
What do you mean? Stranger. I'm thinking that he you know, the whole comet thing that I don't know why he chose to do it that way, but he's setting himself up to look like he's essentially an Istari or something similar to that, and he's here to help when in fact he's actually Sauron.
Hmm. So everything he's doing so far would be an act?
Either that, or he somehow, like, you know, it could be something where he's actually locked away part of his own mind and is it's waiting to, you know, come back. I don't know.
I was just,
I mean, I could, of... or I could be wrong. Like, oh, it yeah. might just be like that's like a wizard or something similar.
I really like what they're doing with the Stranger because I have no idea. And it does seem like he'll do something very wizardly and beautiful, like with the fireflies. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, amazing. And then they all die and you're like, oh no.
Well, and the part where the cultists show up and examine the crater.
That's what I was bringing up. Cause everybody was talking so much about them when we saw them in the trailer, and we've only seen them like once.
Yeah.
And, so far.
And so we know from the interviews before the show that those are like Sauron cultists that worship Sauron. So it makes me think that they're probably trying to track down Sauron at the same time that Galadriel is. Now, maybe they're wrong and the crater is something else, but it makes me think that maybe the theory that the Stranger is actually Sauron might be onto something.
Well, it's like, obviously when he lands, there's some of it that just feels so obvious and on the nose, but the whole crater looked like a burning eye, and
and it was like the fire that didn't burn people, like, you know, that was the same thing as the torch from the beginning part with Galadriel's people.
Oh yeah, I think was it Nori or Poppy said that like it wasn't hot.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, and, Alex, and what was the theory that you brought up? Whose theory
it's
was
this
that?
One. I heard it from Alden and Ken and Rachel and Casterly talk. That was the first time this had ever crossed my mind. But Torbis has a similar idea, so thank you for the super chat, Torbis. About Halbrand being very deceiving. He looks very fair. He's a smith. I think Alden's still here, so he can help me with whatever I forget. But he has a lot of qualities that I'm like, oh my God, is he just kind of manipulating Galadriel into being like, no, I don't want to go back to the Southlands. And she's like, you like convinces him to go, quote unquote, convinces him. She
that
even
would be,
has the line.
That would
she
be
has
so
a line that's
brutal.
Like, some could say you're using me to get back to the Southlands and place a crown upon your head and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that would be awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To have her spend all this time like helping him and them working together for then we find out for him to be Sauron, that would be heartbreaking.
Yeah, well, and also he talked about how like Galadriel doesn't know what he's done before. Like he was like working for like aiding Sauron at the very least or something like that before he found his way onto that flotilla.
So. Also, Adard, like, he kept asking him if he recognized him, and
yeah,
that was
hilarious.
Yeah,
so he has some kind of history with Adar, yeah.
That was something that Rachel and Alden, all the Casterly Talk people brought up, was that he comes back and he's like, do you remember me? And he's like, no. And I took that line as the M. Bison from Street Fighter of like, I've killed so many people. Like to me, that was just a Tuesday.
Yeah.
But then later on, he does ask like, seriously, who are you? So if Adar did think he killed Sauron and then Sauron is coming back to get a little vengeance on Adar, like that's interesting. And yeah, we like... Everyone just accept this dude as king. He just shows up and they're like, are you the one we were promised? And he's like, I am. And they're all like, yay. And I'm like, can we see some qualifications? Some like seal of approval? I don't know. Certificate of authenticity?
I think that it would be, more likely that he might end up being like the Witch King or someone like that. You know? I mean, maybe he's Sauron and he's just hiding completely, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it to me.
Maybe he said like, yes to being the new king because he knew what was about to go down. He's sure, I'll be your king.
That's everyone's. He's got the logo. He's got a patch. It's like, I can find a logo. I'll carry a logo around if it makes me king.
Yeah, he's got like the magic pouch. Car keys of Mordor or whatever.
Yeah. but yeah, that was a theory that I was like, oh, that holds a lot of water, I think. And it does seem odd that we wouldn't have seen Sauron by now, but maybe they are saving him for season two.
I've seen a few people say that the little kid is the Witch King.
Yeah, that Theo might end up being the Witch King. I was kind of actually thinking that Theo might end up being end up turning that direction. But then with the way that the like last episode went, I kind of don't think so anymore.
I really liked that scene of him ridding himself of the power, or at least trying to. He's the only one smart enough to open up the sack.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on, people.
It was tied up real good.
Waldreg's not anywhere to be seen. Open that bag up.
Mm-hmm.
That was I had no idea what was happening when that all went down. I was like, okay, oh, it's the tunnels that they were digging and then the water. And like, Alex, you were like, oh, shit, like I know it's what is about to happen, but
the second it panned up to Aradruin, I was like, oh no, which is such a good payoff of the tunnels.
Is that's the name of the volcano?
Yeah, Mount Doom is Aradruin is its actual name before that.
And that was they called it out an episode or two before. They just said something about Aradruin over there, and I was like, I made the same face as I made when they said Slymore on Andor. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, it was Bronn when she mentioned like all the towns between here and Arad Ruin or something, and it was like, okay, yep, that's where they are.
They're definitely in Mordor.
Yeah.
And even I did not know what Udun meant. I didn't remember where it was or that it was even a location, but I knew opening up the episode list and like getting ready to hit play on the episode Udun, I was like, that's bad.
Yeah, it actually means a few different things. There's a few different things named Udun that are all kind of named after each other. So Udun was
Got it.
Yeah, that was mentioned by Gandalf. And the reason that he calls the Balrog Flame of Udun is because Udun also is a word that the elves use for basically like hell, kind of. Or it's also another name for Atumno, which was Morgoth's like fortress, which is where the Balrogs take him in the first age after he fights with Ungoliant. So Udun and Balrogs being in Udun is a thing. But also there was a region of Mordor that was named Udun after that. So that's probably what they're referencing in the actual. Mm-hmm.
But it being labeled as hell is appropriate now, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We're jumping back a little bit, but Torbis had another theory when we were talking about the stranger and all that. They're guessing he is Tilion or a blue wizard. I know the blue wizard's kind of. Who is Tilion?
It's another Maiar from the Silmarillion, but I don't remember if he's in the Silmarillion or just some of the other books, but yeah, it's a Maiar of, oh no, it is in the Silmarillion because Tilion ends up being like the guardian of the moon when they actually create the sun and the moon. So yeah, that's that one. It would be kind of interesting if it was that, but after Tilion is the guardian of the moon, I don't think we really hear anything else from that Maiar again, because like in the Tolkien, like in Middle Earth, the sun and the moon and like some of the stars are actual like characters doing stuff up in the sky, right? So
like when they talked about Elrond's father becoming a star, it made me think of an Avatar when Sokka's like, my girlfriend turned into the moon.
They're
like,
oh yeah,
buddy. Had that same energy.
Well, there was actually a really that was one of the possibly my favorite little like Easter egg moments is I can't remember if it was this episode. No, it must have been the episode before. There's a shot of Numenor at night, and you see a statue of Arindil with the Silmaril on his brow, and in the background you can see the star cool. Right behind it. It's really cool, just single shot.
So he is literally a star. Like,
yeah, so they get like when he went and found the Valar and got them to help in the war, they gave him a flying ship, and he has the Silmaril on like a crown, and so he and his wife are on this flying ship, and they had them go and fly through the heavens watching for Morgoth's return from the void. So they're actually like flying around up in the sky, and people can see the Silmaril from Middle Earth, and it appears as a star in the sky. So
is he still up there, or does he ever go back to the Undying Lands?
No, he's still up there.
Just chilling.
He's up there until...
Told him, like, Morgoth is for sure gone.
Yeah, there's sort of a... there's, like, a final battle, like, Ragnarok kind of event that's foretold in the Silmarillion, and it's said that he'll return then, along with several other heroes from the story,
That's neat. Hey, what's up, Gio Flores has another question. Just curious if the Shadow Mordor game is canon at all to the show or movies.
No. Short answer is no. It I like what some of the things that they did, like I was mentioning earlier. I like that they explored, like what's the rest of Mordor like besides like Barad-dûr and Mount Doom, and like the Black Gate. What's the rest of it like? What's the like point of the Black Gate? Why was it there in the first place? Like, they kind of talk about some of that stuff, which is cool, but then it kind of goes off the rails with like, people making new rings and getting wraith powers and things like that don't actually make a whole lot of sense. So,
and it's like, I mean, Gollum is in at least the first game. I haven't played Shadow of War at all, but it's like tenuously connected, but not directly, I guess.
Yeah.
There you go. The Celebrimbor unleashed.
Yeah. And like Celebrimbor is just like a ghost for some reason. Like that's not really a thing that happens to elves when they die. So
I had to Google what sexy Shelob looked like.
Oh, no.
Is she sexy? Is she a sexy spider?
I approve. Yeah.
She's supposed to just be a big spider.
So. And that's it.
A couple of people in chat are talking about this light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So so in the Lord of the Rings, Galadriel gives Frodo the light of Arendelle, which is basically like some kind of water that's been like that's absorbed light from that star specifically somehow, some elf thing, you know. But
some of those elf powers.
But yeah, I mean it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, she's like, hey, here's the light of my let's see.
Cousin?
I'm trying to think of how they would be related. So Elrond is her son-in-law. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you would call that, but my son-in-law's dad shines some light into this vial of water.
So we are talking about elves and stuff, and that's I want to ask, why are Celebrimbor? Yeah, what's your take on Celebrimbor and Gil-galad? Why are they being so shady? I guess they are afraid that they're going to lose their immortality or something, but I was expecting Gil-galad to be like this big noble character, only knowing what I have briefly seen of him in the prologue of Lord of the Rings, but he's been kind of a jerk.
Well, so Gil-galad is supposed to be kind of a big hero kind of character. He's the High King of the Noldor, but he also has just like survived like this massive war with Morgoth and cleaning up afterwards, and seeing the entirety of Beleriand destroyed by what Morgoth did. Like he's had massive amounts of loss. And so while he is a good character, he's also a hardened character, you know, like he's gone through a lot. So if, you know, not keeping Elrond in the know helps them save all the elves, he's the kind of character that would probably do that, you know?
That's something that I think has been, I wasn't expecting from the show at first, is that all of the good guys have been cagey with each other. I was expecting it from the elves and the dwarves, but like the elves and the Numenoreans are not cool with each other. But I like knowing that we are building towards a last alliance, and that all of these people are going to put aside their differences and stand together on the slopes of Mount Doom now that we see it be created. But mm-hmm. It's weird seeing them all being a little more like unwilling to work together right now.
Yeah. The dwarves and the elves like sort of did fight together during the war against Morgoth. But yeah, there's like a lot of baggage with their relationship with each other that is not good. And so it kind of, they are uneasy allies at best most of the time.
What's the deal with the Numenoreans? Why do they dislike elves so much?
So the Numenoreans, so they were given the island of Numenor when, after the war with Morgoth and Beleriand was destroyed, they were given that island to live on, as their people were called the Edain, and they were the humans that fought with the elves against Morgoth. And they were allowed to settle on Numenor, which was very close to the Undying Lands because they had a really good relationship with the elves, and a lot of those elves went back to the Undying Lands. And then their first king was Elros, which is Elrond's brother, and Elros chose to be immortal. Like they were both given the option of either being a mortal man and being like really important and like kings, or being an elf and just being like just another elf, basically. And they chose, you know, different options. And the Numenoreans were very close with the elves. That's part of the reason they were given the Pelentiers, was that the elves gave them the Pelentiers because they couldn't go to the Undying Lands, but they were so close that the elves had a Pelentier in the Undying Lands, and they were able to communicate with the Numenoreans using those seeing stones.
So that's basically a tin can and string.
Mm-hmm. Sort of, yeah.
Like a magical version of it. It has to be close enough, but
yeah, basically.
Yeah, walkie-talkies.
But over time, it's different in the show versus the books. In the books, it's Sauron's influence. In the show, it's that they've seen this vision through the Palantir, through that one particular Palantir, that the downfall of Numenor will begin with Galadriel arriving. So that's why they were so anti-elf in the show.
I also like this idea that they want to be immortal, but they can't, but they know the elves really well, so they're just jealous.
Yeah, I guess the like general populace of Numenor doesn't probably know about the vision. So I guess their sort of opinion about elves might just be that they're kind of outsiders. You know, the Numenorians have been doing fine, living on their island by themselves for hundreds of years. And nobody else kind of, coming in and bothering them. But they also mentioned like elven workers coming in and like they're immortal and don't have to sleep and stuff. So maybe like in part of Numenor, there are some elves that are just like, making shirts and stuff. I think that's what
Alpharazon said was going to happen. Elves are going to come in and take your gerbs.
Right.
What we see in the show, is that the original Numenor that they had? Because I didn't they say that, like, I think Isildur was talking about that not being
Numenor. Like the true Numenor. Yeah, they talk about like the west of Numenor. And
I thought he was metaphorically speaking about that. Like,
that's Numenor's something I'm actually curious about, because they also talk about Anarion, which is Isildur's brother.
I was
going
to ask about
going
him, yeah.
west, and I'm curious what that means exactly. Like, is there like a colony of Numenorians that live on like the furthest west portion of the island that's kind of like separate, that's pro-elf or something? I'm not really sure.
And because the two Argonath are Isildur and Anarion, right?
I think it's Elendil and Isildur.
Oh, is it? Okay. I thought Anarion, like Anarion, were we going to see him at all? Because I thought
he's supposed to be alive.
he's in the LA of Numenor. No. He's got a great screenplay that he wants you to read.
He got sent to the west of Numenor for a Palantir premiere. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's supposed to still be alive because he becomes the king of the Northern Kingdom.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. I think that got through all of my questions, but we didn't really talk about just this episode all that much, which, again, my favorite episode, but I think part of it is because of how well it was built up over the past five. This one, it was just the episode where it like grabbed me and I was like, okay, I see what they're doing and I get it a lot more. It's starting to make me feel more like watching the Lord of the Rings films. And I'm psyched about that.
We talked a lot about the Numenorean armor and how you said that it looked a lot like which other armor?
I don't remember.
they had the ponytails.
Oh, the Rohan armor.
Yeah, it was kind of like the Rohirrim. Yeah, the helmets at least.
Yeah.
How do you think they're going to handle that? Because I know Rohan is supposed to be way off into the future, but
yeah, so at this point the people that eventually become the people of Rohan are still living in the north and haven't come south yet for quite a while. It would be much later. So I mean, it's possible with them editing the timelines that they could make that a thing, but I kind of doubt it now, because at first I was thinking maybe it'll be a thing because we saw that horse sword in the promos, but now we see that the cavalry of Numenor are the ones that actually use those style swords. So probably not.
Do you think we're gonna get to go ahead, Molly?
No, go ahead. I was gonna change the subject.
I was too.
Oh, okay.
do you think they're gonna get to building like Minas Tirith, Minas Ithil? Are we gonna see all of that by the end, or is that all happen after the Last Alliance?
I think that we probably will see that, because they're built first, because, Minas Tirith and Osgiliath and Minas Ithil are there first. And then when Sauron actually comes back as like a Dark Lord, he takes over Minas Ithil and it becomes Minas Morgul. So, okay. So that's there first. So maybe, I mean, it would be pretty, I'm interested to see what they do with the timeline with all of that though, for sure.
This comment made me think of what I was going to say, because we've seen Legolas have these various just kick-ass moments where he takes down an entire elephant of people or whatever those are called. And like, this comment made me think the destruction of that tower with Arondir, is that his name?
Arondir.
Arondir. That was so badass. That was so cool. I was like, we know the elves are cool. Do they have to do this and be even cooler? But yeah.
I mean, I felt like his like Legolas moment was him catching the arrow and then shooting
which
it back
was
at the
also
orc.
Sick. Mm.
Yeah, that was.
He's had, cool yeah, moment. He's had a couple of good, just like moments like that.
I remember we were watching that on the plane home from the Andor stuff, and I just remember being on the plane going, "Oh!" as he caught the arrow and shot it back.
Yeah,
but yeah, I thought that the destruction of the tower was very balanced. It wasn't Legolas taking down an entire Oliphant. It wasn't surfing down the stairs, but it was cool enough that he just like made a good shot. Took down the whole tower, and then kicking that stone to close the doors was just, that was just neat.
Yeah, like locking them in there.
Yeah.
I do like Torbis commented about seeing Narsil in the Pelantiri mm-hmm. episode. I was mm-hmm. also very excited about that.
What else was in there? Because you were at the bachelor party, I think you were telling me about one of the spears, and that all fell out of my head.
Well, it was an axe. So you see, okay. Yeah, Narsil is there, which I guess at some point is going to get given to Elendil. And then you also see Drambarleg, which is the axe of Tuor, who's a human hero who wasn't a Numenorean or anything. But when the Numenoreans left to go settle Numenor, they took that axe with them. And that's the last we hear about it. So it's cool that we saw it in like that room, like that artifact room or whatever. Also, I'm pretty sure the Dragon Helm of Dor Loman was in the background, which is another, heirloom sort of cool artifact, which we actually saw a number of times previous because we see the Dragon Helm of Dor Loman in one of the carved elven statues on the trees when Galadriel is talking about all those memorials. And then I think it was one of the heads that that Durin's kids were walking around inside of it in that one scene. So either that or it's a helmet that's designed the same.
We need to make that meme of like the Predator handshake where it's Lord of the Rings or Rings of Power and Andor giving people like a little museum full of Easter eggs to look at.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I like this Brian. Part. I was like, that part, I was like too much for me. I was like so grossed out and I kept screaming, close your mouth.
I really want to talk about the brutality of this show surprised me. I also wanted to point out, I like Brian Ferrer's question. I think it's a good question to end on about, so we'll come back to that. But the sixth episode was really violent. Like I expect it from Game of Thrones or something, but from watching Lord of the Rings, it's like, yeah, you're going to see a couple orcs get their heads chopped off, but that's about the extent of it. It was brutal watching them like slowly stabbing villagers.
Yeah. Or it was an interesting decision from a, writing perspective for them to make it a theme of like, oh, let's show a lot of orc blood so that when he finds mm-hmm. the red human blood, it'll be obvious why that's important, you know, that their blood looks different. And yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, they did have moments where I was like, man, these orcs are under a constant like high PSI. Like they're just like, they get popped and just like shoots out of them, you know? but it was cool. I mean, it was surprising. It was surprising to see from a Lord of the Rings thing.
Made me think of, there's like one shot, I think in one of the Lord of the Rings movies where an Uruk-hai is like getting stabbed and he just like stabs it in even further.
Lurts.
Yeah. So it made me think about that, but like that was we didn't really get that graphic in those movies.
Yeah.
I think the worst thing they did in the movies was the catapults full of human heads. Like that was pretty rough, but we didn't see the murders.
Yeah.
I was just not expecting the amount of human violence to happen in this series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. But,
oh, good.
I had a question because this reminded me of it. He put those little seeds in her. Was that to heal her?
I think those seeds were just like very flammable, and so the point was that they would like go up really fast and hot.
Oh. And,
Molly asked what happens when you did that, and I said, "That's how ints are made." And she said, "Really?" And I was like, "No."
I thought you were for real. I was like, "That makes sense."
Oh yeah, no, those elves, they make ints and then they skin them and make breastplates out of their faces.
Oh no. you had last week at the bachelor party, you had a lot of fun theories about Adar. How do you feel about the reveal that he's like just one of the OG Uruks?
I like that. I like this a lot. So my theory originally was that it might have been Aeol or Maeglin who somehow survived what happened to them in Gondolin, which I then told you about for like 2 hours.
Again, bachelor party, don't remember. That was.
But no, the reveal that he's one of the Moriondor, which is a new term that's not from the books, but that he's one of the first, he's like the first step towards an orc, is really cool. It speaks to one of Tolkien's notes about where orcs might have come from, but he never actually specified for certain where orcs originally came from. He kind of went back and forth in his notes about it. But one of the prevailing theories, and the one that they talk about in the movie, is Saruman talks about how they were elves once and then they were twisted mm-hmm. into, you know, the orcs. So this is, we're still going with that theory as far as where orcs come from. And I thought it was neat to see, okay, this is what like the first generation of that process turns out to be.
Yeah, I never expected them to still look like elves.
Yeah,
I guess I just never thought that there would be a missing link, so to speak. But I liked that he bled black.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, if he took elves and then tortured them and like abused them to the point of them basically not being elves anymore and like changing them into something else, it makes sense that they would at least still resemble elves and that they would have the immortality of elves potentially. I mean, I feel like. So the way that elves normally die is by either being like killed by an orc or losing the will to live, and then they like expire. So
I call that the Padme.
Like Padme.
Yeah. So I guess Adar was just a particularly like strong-willed elf who wouldn't give up holding on to life. So
I think it's so interesting because like I talked about how they did a lot of human violence in the series. And we're so used to seeing orc violence, but Adar views them as like his children, and it humanizes the orcs a lot.
It is kind of interesting that we're getting that kind of gray area of like, because Tolkien typically is very like good versus evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty straightforward in the movies, at least what they cover in the movies. There's some stuff in the books that's a little bit less so, and especially in the Silmarillion. But we're seeing that in this story, which is really interesting. Like actually exploring like, okay, so, you know, orcs are still people, kind of. Like his whole thing about their servants of the secret fire, just like the elves, is basically him saying that they're people and they have like souls and they have names and desires and, you know, they're not just some object, which is interesting. That's part of why Tolkien went back and forth in his notes about it, was he wasn't sure that he wanted to humanize the orcs in that way, but at least I think that's why. But you know,
something Alden said in Casterly Talk I liked a lot is that if you take Adar's speech to the orcs out of context and it's just all you know are the words, it's a very heroic speech. And if you take Galadriel's speech to Adar about how she's going to hunt you down and like, or I'm going to keep you alive until you know that all of your offspring are dead. It's like, take that out of context. That's the villain's speech. And
yeah.
It's really cool the way they're writing this story.
Well, and Adar's comeback to that was really cool too, uh-huh. where he was like, oh, maybe your search for Morgoth's, you know, his, you know, what was the word?
Check the mirror.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I thought that was really neat.
Basically saying that she's been twisted by darkness just as much as he has been.
Mm-hmm. And we do see also that Adar has like the blood that the orcs have. So he actually,
That little cut to his neck. Mm-hmm. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, he bleeds black. And Tom, thanks for the super chat. Sorry, just arrived, but how do the Uruk-hai fit into this taxonomy with orcs and Adar?
So Uruk-hai were basically Saruman's idea of a perfected orc. Saruman is all about technology. He's another Maiar of Ayule. So he's all about, you know, machines and technology and crafts. And he works out a way to breed orcs that no longer are susceptible to sunlight. They don't like it, but they're not like literally catching on fire. And they're bigger and stronger and all of that. And those are called Uruk-hai. But those don't come along until, you know, Saruman and Isengard.
Mm-hmm. So Uruk just means orc in black speech, and high is just kind of like a heightened version of them.
Mm-hmm.
Super orc.
Super orc, yeah.
Well, I'll pop back up to Brian's super chat because I think this will be a good way to close things out. Even though we're planning on covering the last two episodes week to week. So hopefully we will still be able to do that. But what do you think our season one cliffhanger will be? Where are we headed with the last two episodes? Speculate responsibly. I still have that up.
So I think that our cliffhanger, what the cliffhanger will be.
Or maybe resolution, like what's going to be the end? It might feel like a full kind of complete season story.
I expect us to figure out a little bit of like who the stranger is, and that could be one of the cliffhangers. I think there's potential for several cliffhangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one of the cliffhangers might be the stranger finally like giving them a name for him and him saying that it's Annatar if he is actually Sauron. That would be really cool because that's the alias that Sauron goes under when he's actually just trying to be like appear as a good guy. That could be one thing. I think that the Numenoreans are going to get hung up trying to like track down orcs and deal with Mordor exploding. And that's why they're going to stick around and build like Minas Tirith and things like that. Mm. I'm curious if Isildur's sister is going to get involved with actually like designing Minas Tirith and things like that. Cause she's part of the crafting guild, where that's all going to go. What's going to happen to Miriel, you know, how is Pharazôn going to end up taking over? That sort of thing, but
I was surprised that they
happen. Maybe it'll happen differently than in the book.
I was surprised that they explicitly stated that they were cousins. I was kind of like, they don't have to say that. He can still force her into marriage and everything. Mm-hmm. Oh, but they said it.
yeah. I think that. I mean, it is kind of interesting. The show's called Rings of Power, so. It would be kind of weird if we don't get any like Rings of Power in the first season at all. So maybe if whoever turns out to be Sauron or Annatar ends up like getting in contact with Celebrimbor and then he like opens an like letter or something and it's like, oh, I can make rings magical. And maybe that'll like help get the energy to the rest of the elves or, you know, something like that. Or him like opening like some notes similar to Gandalf in the libraries of Minas Tirith and like uncovering lore about Rings of Power, you know, something like that. I think that we'll see something about, oh, Celebrimbor is planning on making some rings.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's where it'll wrap up the first season.
I'm kind of feeling like they maybe will reveal Sauron, whether it's someone that we know already or someone who's just like, hello, Celebrimbor, I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of rings?
Yeah.
End credits.
Yeah, or like maybe it'll be one of those like cultists. We still haven't seen what they're doing at all. So I think that the next episode we'll probably see a lot more about what is going on with the stranger and the cultists and, you know, the dwarves and everything. I don't know. I'm excited to see what happens with all that.
I'm curious as to what we see for the Harfoots in the finale. Like I'm afraid that Nori and her and Poppy and like her family get left behind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, if the stranger turns out to be Sauron, Poppy already called it, saying that the all the bad things that happen for the next three seasons are going to be their fault.
But
yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm curious what will happen with them. I mean, I don't think that they'll steal their wheels and leave them behind or whatever. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I guess now they're like on good terms because the stranger saved what's her name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that big boar that attacked them.
The wolves, yeah. The giant, I think, like, weird wolves.
I think there's a potential for like four or five cliffhangers, kind of the way Game of Thrones would end their seasons, of every storyline gets a little tease for what's to come in season two. I think we'll probably follow that similar format.
Well, I like that some of the storylines, a la Game of Thrones, have merged also. Like the Numenorean storyline and the Southland storyline have kind of become the same storyline now. Although we still have people in Numenor and we're like, what are they doing? But yeah.
Yeah, because like when the first couple episodes, I was like so confused as to what was going on and like what direction we were headed for the story. But yeah, now that some of the storylines are combining with the other ones, it's becoming a lot more clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm enjoying seeing everything start to come together, and I assume they will even more. Hopefully it doesn't take all the way to the Last Alliance, but is that, I mean, now we're jumping way ahead, but do you think that is like the last few episodes of the entire series?
I think that's where it'll culminate. I mean, at least that's the idea, you know, because the Last Alliance and their fight against Sauron is the end of that age. So if that's what they're supposed to be covering with this show, it makes sense that it would lead up to that. And we'd get kind of a like retelling of the prologue from Fellowship of the Ring, which would be pretty cool. As far as, you know, being able to watch the show and then it leads straight into the movies.
This reminded me, we kind of had this thought too of like, the thing that he does kind of looked like something a wizard would have done with their staff.
Mm-hmm. Well, he looked like there was a gnarly looking tree next to him. And I was like, oh, is he about to, I thought he was going to rip a branch off and start wielding magic out of it. But
yeah,
again, they're really keeping us guessing with him.
I saw some other funny like theories being like, oh, is it Tom Bombadil, you know, or somebody like that, which would be kind of funny.
Doesn't, I think Alden said that, something about,
oh really? Was that in the comments earlier? I missed that one. But yeah, I mean, like at this point, it's anybody's guess. My feeling is that he's going to end up being Sauron, but I could completely be wrong. Like that's just a, you know, feeling. He could end up.
They're
being,
doing a good job of whatever. Like there's so many clues that I'm like, that feels too obvious, but maybe they think we'll think it's too obvious. And I don't know.
Sauron is Mephisto right now.
Yeah, that's when's Mephisto showing up?
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think that's a good stopping point. And we will, I don't know when next week we'll do it. Maybe we'll do it closer to Friday or Saturday or Sunday again, whenever. We'll figure it out. But I think our schedules are a little more open right now, so we should be able to finish off the season. But thanks for explaining everything to us, Ashton.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
I mean, I'm doing a video with Slam Sector, which is like our Warhammer thing.
Oh yeah,
a week or so. So I think we're gonna do like there's a Warhammer Magic the Gathering set that's coming out that we're gonna do some stuff with. So
cool.
Yeah, check out Slam Sector. We're doing Warhammer stuff.
Nice.
And they have great fanny packs.
Yeah. Well, they're tactical dice holders, actually.
Oh. <Uh-oh. laughs>
Sean Sullivan in chat had one on Happy Hour the other night, and I was like, did they send one to you? And he was like, no, I bought one.
I was like, nice.
So they're already selling like hotcakes. Yeah. But we will be back live streaming again on Wednesday to cover Andor on our after show. No ifs and or buts. And then we'll be doing a Lego stream on Thursday. And then next weekend sometime we'll talk about Rings of Power episode 7. But that's it for today. So thank you all for watching. And what's a good not May the Force be with you, but something that's Lord of the Ringsy that we could say?
May the light of the Silmarils light your way. I don't know.
Perfect. Ending broadcast.